Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and illness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field."
I want to start with a question this morning. What do you notice most about the world around you? Perhaps for those of us who live in Godalming, it's the beauty of our physical landscape, right? We've got the Surrey Hills to our northeast. We've got the Sussex Downs to our south, and a smattering of lovely, quaint English villages around us as well. Perhaps you prefer to close your eyes and listen to the wonderful sounds that we get to enjoy. The thrill of birdsong early in the morning. That little rhythm of rain falling on your roof overnight. The gentle rustle of wind blowing through the leaves on the trees. Well, whether it's sights or sound that get us excited, an inescapable feature of life in the modern world is people. People are everywhere. And it has become so much more noticeable, hasn't it, now that we've got to sort of awkwardly slide past people at 2 meter distance. One of the most obvious things to come out of COVID has been just how difficult it is to avoid people. Shops have to limit their customers. Restaurants have to meticulously space out their tables. And even some beaches have been closed to avoid the risk of overcrowding as well. You see, people are everywhere. And one of the things that this passage is going to make us think through this morning is, how do we feel about those fellow people? How do we feel about the fellow humans that we have to live alongside day by day? I ask that question because, if we're honest, people can be particularly annoying at times, can't they? They dawdle whilst they walk in the middle of the pavement so no one else can get past. They take 5 minutes standing right next to the fridges in the supermarket, trying to decide between two different types of sausages, when all you want to do is just slide in and grab what you know you want. It's the last thing on your list. They cut into lines of traffic. They park across two bays. They make noise late at night when you're trying to go to sleep. And you know they vote for the wrong politicians. They've got the wrong opinions about COVID. The list just goes on and on and on. We can find other people so grating. And despite God's call to us as Christians to love our neighbour as ourselves, day by day, let's be honest, we can actually find it really, really hard, can't we? Contrast our failures here with what we see of Jesus in today's passage. Jesus, seeing the crowds, he had compassion on them. Verse 36. He saw them with their weaknesses, with their sin, with all of their annoyances. But he also saw their deepest needs, and he loved them. Well, this passage teaches us much of Christ's heart for the lost, the broken, and the needy people of this world. And it teaches us to follow his example, to join in his mission of sharing his love and his compassion with that world as well. So our first point this morning is about Christ's compassion. So let's see it here. You know, over the last few weeks of Matthew's gospel, we've seen Christ using his immense power as the Son of God to love and serve the people of the land of Palestine. He's raised dead girls to life. He's healed sick women. He's restored the sight to the blind. He's cast out demons as well. He has been relentless in his efforts to love people. And he continues in this week's passage. Look down at verse 35 with me. We read that Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in the synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and illness. Now, we should be amazed here at just how fearless and sacrificial Jesus is. We read that he went around healing every disease and illness. There wasn't anything too grotesque or infectious for Jesus that would make him turn his back on people. He moves towards everyone that society has cast out, and he loves them. Notice too, though, how Jesus isn't just here to help them practically. He's not just healing. There's many calls for churches today to be more earthly minded, to concern ourselves with the financial and practical aid of others, and less concerned with discipleship and evangelism. Now, of course, it's right that we look to the practical needs of other people around the world. But notice how for Jesus, this never prevented him from sharing the message as well. As he went through all the towns and villages, he didn't just heal, but he also taught in the synagogues. And he proclaimed, we read, the good news of the kingdom of God. See, for Jesus, a deep love for others was inseparable from a concern for their spiritual health too. He wanted them to know their God. For the people of Israel, this was the God who made heaven and earth, who brought them out of Egypt in the Exodus story, who had preserved them and protected them for many generations, and who now had sent the promised Messiah, Jesus, to earth to save them from their sin. You see, this here is a picture of total love, a holistic love that takes in both the here and now and our eternal souls as well. Matthew, the author of this account, wants us to see the total contrast here between Jesus and the other so-called spiritual leaders of the day. We see that when Jesus saw the crowds, he saw them as sheep without shepherds, harassed and helpless. They seem to be without guidance, without protection, not the recipients of anyone else's compassion or concern, but they've been left to fend for themselves in a harsh and hostile world by a priestly class who, as we've seen time and time again throughout the Gospels, have been far too aloof and self-important to raise an eyebrow at the sufferings and sin of others. Jesus, though, is not like that. Look at Jesus. He is not someone who has left them shepherdless, but he is a man full of compassion. He is a shepherd with such love and compassion for the flock that he will quite literally, as it says in John chapter 10, elsewhere in the Bible, lay down his life for his sheep, doing everything required, paying the biggest sacrifice to secure their safety in eternity to come. Well, what a picture we're seeing here in these few short verses of the love of Christ. And I want to say, let our hearts be warmed this morning by his love and compassion for the lost, because we know, Christians, that us too, we are recipients of that very same love and compassion. See, even though Jesus doesn't physically walk this earth, still he sees us, still he knows our helplessness, and still he loves us, has compassion on us, and is our shepherd. I wonder how you think Jesus feels about you right now, in this moment, at 11:26 on Sunday morning. Already, many of us, I'm sure, feel like failures. You know, you've woken up bleary-eyed, pressed snooze 5 or 6 times, finally managed to haul yourself out of bed only to stub your toe. You've just about managed to stop yourself from swearing as a result until you spilt your coffee. And then it's all gone downhill from there. And we're in a bit of a terrible state, feeling awful about ourselves, wondering how on earth could Jesus still love me? Well, the wonderful news is that he does. We know how we're supposed to feel. We know that we're supposed to know that Jesus loved us. But we also know that when we've failed again, when we've messed up another time, we've done something stupid once more, when we feel tired and frustrated with ourselves because of our sin and our weakness, and when life just feels totally overwhelming, we know how quickly we forget Jesus' love. We know how quickly we forget and we know how quickly we think that he thinks we're failures too. But look again at how Jesus sees the lost, the helpless, the harassed, the broken in these verses. Look at his compassion for them. And know this morning that is the same love and compassion he has for us too. He invites all of us this morning, no matter who we are, to come and enjoy his love, to receive it afresh this morning without fear of being turned away. Come to me, he says, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest for your souls, because his heart towards us is gentle and humble. Well, those of us who know that love are invited by Christ, not just to enjoy it for ourselves, but also to share it with others. Christians are committed to increasingly conform to the image of Jesus. We want to be like him, to love like him. And that is going to mean following his example set here to have compassion on the people around us as well. Now, there's no denying that that's a tough job, but let us remember the reason that we're to love. In the Bible, a little bit later on in a book called 1 John, the author writes that we love because he, talking about Jesus, first loved us. So it's only as the kind of the knowing recipients of God's love for us in Christ that we're going to be able to love other people with this Christ-like compassion as well. So we need to take the time to enjoy God's love for ourselves, to enjoy the gospel, to take to heart all of the glories of everything that God has done for us, so that we would become so full of God's love as we've drunk on it ourselves, that that love then overflows towards other people as well, so that we can share in a compassion that serves not just the practical need of others, but also a genuine concern for their spiritual health as well, both of our church family and of those all around the world. Which leads us to our second point this morning, Christ's call. Because of course, we know that there are so many out there with no experience or knowledge of Christ's love and compassion at all. People who've never even heard of Jesus, or people with no real understanding of who he is and what he's done in his life, his death, and his resurrection for us. See, for many today, Jesus is just an unknown irrelevance. Now, of course, the same was kind of true back then. As Jesus wandered around ancient Palestine, sharing the message, teaching and healing in the synagogues, that was to a very small number. And there were many others in the world who had absolutely no idea what was going on at all. Many people who'd never experienced Christ's love whatsoever. Now, referring to those people who didn't know what was going on at all, Jesus now employs a new metaphor. No longer are the crowds like the shepherds, like sheep without shepherds. Instead, they are crops within a harvest field, ripe to be plucked, but with seemingly too few workers doing the work of harvesting. Just look at verse 37 again. The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Now, I'm not much of a farmer, but even I can see that that isn't an ideal situation. In the first century, without the mechanization of agriculture, you know, combine harvesters and tractors to do lots of the work, a plentiful harvest or a bumper crop is going to need more than just a few workers in order to tend to it, to harvest it, and then to process it afterwards. See, Jesus is saying that in a world like ours, where many do not know his love for themselves in the gospel, there's also a great lack of workers to go out there to take the message and bring home the crop. The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Well, imagine we hadn't read the next verse already this morning, though. What would you expect Jesus to say next? The harvest is plentiful, the workers are few, so you'd better get on with it. Stop wasting your time. Move, people. There is a job to be done. But it's interesting and surprising that he doesn't say that, does he? Contrary to our desire to be productive and efficient, Jesus tells his disciples that the first thing that they need to do is pray. Verse 38, ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into the harvest field. Now, praying before we attempt anything is sound advice, whatever it is that we're doing. But it is especially important when we are faced with the mammoth spiritual task of sharing the gospel with the world. You know, there are billions out there. This harvest, it really is plentiful. But we are kidding ourselves if we think that we're even going to make a dent in it if we attempt the spiritual work of evangelism and discipleship apart from God. No, we need to be people, first of all, who pray to God. Pray for his work to be done. You know, life can feel so full and busy at times with work and family and church, and we wonder, how on earth am I ever going to get around to fulfilling the Great Commission of sharing the gospel with all the nations? Well, the good news is that even the busiest this morning can do the most important thing. We can pray. Ask the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into his harvest field, praying that a new generation would go to plant churches, to make disciples, to evangelize the lost. Pray for new pastors. Pray for them in the UK. Pray for them abroad. Pray for God's workers, for God's harvest field. Now, there's one or two other lessons that we can learn from these verses here. First of all, I think we should be expectantly hopeful, because Jesus says that the harvest is plentiful. It doesn't always feel like that when we look at church attendance numbers in the UK, but we have here a promise from God that the harvest will be plentiful, that the people are out there, that they will come to him when he calls them. So we need to pray with confidence for more workers and for a large crop. The second, we also see how it is God who shoulders the responsibility here. It's the Lord of the harvest job we see to send out workers into his harvest field. Just as elsewhere, Paul, another person writing in the Bible, writes that although it's people who share the message and plant the seed, if you like, it is God who provides the growth. You see, it is God alone who reveals himself to the lost. It is God alone who opens the eyes of people's hearts to see Jesus for who he is. And it is God alone who raises up and sends out workers for his harvest field. Now, that means that we need to keep on trusting in God as we hope to see many get to work in this harvest field, and as we hope to see many come to know and enjoy the love and compassion of Christ for themselves. We need to remember that this is God's work, both in the times where we're discouraged because failures have occurred, but also the times where we start to feel proud because of successes as well. Remember whose work this all is. And so we pray with persistence for more workers and for a large crop. But don't be surprised if, having committed yourself to praying for God to raise up workers, if God chooses to make us an answer to our own prayers. Now, the eagle-eyed amongst you might have noticed what happens in Matthew's gospel immediately after Jesus has instructed his disciples to pray. As chapter 9 finishes and chapter 10 starts, Jesus calls his disciples to him, and then he sends them out to proclaim his message to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. You see, the disciples were called to pray first, but then for these 12 men, the answer that God gave to their prayers was to say, right, off you go. It's time. And of course, we need to be mindful ourselves and open to the many different ways that God is calling us to labor in his harvest field too. Now, that's not to say that we should all pack up our jobs to become preachers, pastors, and evangelists. God has given us our jobs, and they've got real value in God's world. We shouldn't feel guilty for being nurses, builders, engineers, secretaries, sales assistants, teachers, full-time mothers. These jobs are incredibly important and have value in God's world. See, we need to be careful of an attitude that diminishes work that is deemed as being secular. We can and we should do them to the best of our ability in order to honour God. But we also need to be mindful of the different opportunities placed before us to labour in God's harvest field for him. Now, for some of us, that might well mean prayerfully reflecting on whether or not a call into full-time gospel ministry is right for us. And that is something to talk about with your trusted Christian friends, older, wiser people at church who've seen many other people follow that route as well. But for others, it might just mean that we need to be bolder with the opportunities that God does give us each week. For others, it might mean that we need to think carefully about how we use our time and our resources in order to help fund the gospel workers that God is raising up around us. For all of us, it will certainly involve prayer, though. Pray that the Lord of the harvest would raise up workers for his harvest field. Now let's come back to that question that we began with this morning. How do you feel about the people that you encounter day by day? Sure, they might not be our favourites. They might not be the easiest people to get along with. But we need to remember the love of Christ at those times. Remember how he dearly loved us, ourselves. His great love and compassion for us in the gospel. Remember his great love and compassion for the crowds that gathered around him in the verses we've read this morning. And then we need to try our very best with God's help, which he graciously gives us, to have love and compassion upon them too. Importantly, we want them not just to experience Christ's love for us, but to come to know Christ for themselves. And so we should, as Jesus tells us, be a people of prayer, praying that God would send out workers into his plentiful harvest. And then we must be ready and we must be willing when we find ourselves with opportunities to support that work too.